except that, and this is important and widely overlooked, without religion there would be no labels by which to decide whom to oppress and whom to avenge. And the real problem in Northern Ireland is that the labels are inherited down many generations. Catholics, whose parents, grandparents, and great-grandparents went to Catholic schools, send their children to Catholic schools. Protestants, whose parents, grandparents, and great-grandparents went to Protestant schools, send their children to Protestant schools. The two sets of people have the same skin colour, they speak the same language, they enjoy the same things, but they might as well belong to different species, so deep is the historic divide. And without religion and religiously segregated education, the divide simply would not be there. From Kosovo to Palestine, from Iraq to Sudan, from Ulster to the Indian subcontinent, look carefully at any region of the world where you find intractable enmity and violence between rival groups. I cannot guarantee that you'll find religions as the dominant labels for in-groups and out-groups, but it's a very good bet.
In India, at the time of partition, more than 1 million people were massacred in religious riots between Hindus and Muslims, and 15 million displaced from their homes. There were no badges other than religious ones with which to label whom to kill. Ultimately, there was nothing to divide them but religion. Salman Rushdie was moved by a more recent bout of religious massacres in India to write an article called "Religion, as Ever, is the Poison in India's Blood." Here's his concluding paragraph.
What is there to respect in any of this, or in any of the crimes now being committed almost daily around the world in religion's dreaded name? How well, with what fatal results, religion erects totems, and how willing we are to kill for them. And when we've done it often enough, the deadening of affect that results makes it easier to do it again. So India's problem turns out to be the world's problem. What happened in India has happened in God's name. The problem's name is God.
Nobody could deny that humanity's powerful tendencies towards in-group loyalties and out-group hostilities would exist even in the absence of religion. Fans of rival football teams are an example of the phenomenon writ small. Even football supporters sometimes divide along religious lines, as in the case of Glasgow Rangers and Glasgow Celtic. Languages, as in Belgium, races and tribes, especially in Africa, can be important divisive tokens. But religion amplifies and exacerbates the damage in at least three ways.
Labelling of children. Children are described as Catholic children or Protestant children, etc., from an early age, and certainly far too early for them to have made up their own minds on what they think about religion. Chapter 9 returns to this abuse of childhood. Segregated schools. Children are educated, again often from a very early age, with members of a religious in-group and separately from children whose families adhere to other religions. It is not an exaggeration to say that the troubles in Northern Ireland would disappear in a generation if segregated schooling were abolished. Taboos against marrying out. This perpetuates hereditary feuds and vendettas by preventing the mingling of feuding groups. Intermarriage, if it were permitted, would naturally tend to mollify enmities.
The village of Glenarm in Northern Ireland is the seat of the Earls of Antrim. On one occasion, within living memory, the then Earl did the unthinkable. He married a Catholic. Immediately, in houses throughout Glenarm, the blinds were drawn in mourning. A horror of marrying out is also widespread among religious Jews. Several of the Israeli children quoted above mentioned the dire perils of assimilation at the forefront of their defence of Joshua's Battle of Jericho. When people of different religions do marry, it is described with foreboding on both sides as a mixed marriage, and there are often prolonged battles over how the children are to be brought up.
When I was a child and still carried a guttering torch for the Anglican Church, I remember being dumbfounded to be told of a rule that when a Roman Catholic married an Anglican, the children were always brought up Catholic. I could readily understand why a priest of either denomination would try to insist on this condition. What I couldn't understand, still can't, was the asymmetry. Why didn't the Anglican priest retaliate with the equivalent rule in reverse? Just less ruthless, I suppose. My old chaplain and Betjeman's Our Padre were simply too nice. Sociologists have done statistical surveys of religious homogamy,